From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be. Across the nation, around the world, I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, some breaking Mars news for you. Andrew Bishago joins us, and then later tonight, those Friday night and the Saturday morning open lines. Here's what's happening. The National Security Agency paid millions of dollars to cover the costs of major internet companies involved in the PRISM surveillance program after a court ruled that some of the agency's activities were unconstitutional. The technology companies, which the NSA includes Google, Yahoo, Microsoft, and Facebook, they incurred the cost to meet the new certification demands in the wake of the ruling from the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. Now, the October judgment, which was declassified by the Obama administration, found that the NSA's inability to separate domestic communications from foreign traffic violated the Fourth Amendment. Scammers are using the old social media trick. A St. Charles, Missouri grandmother almost wired away $13,800. Well, actually, she did, but she was lucky. 83 years old, St. Charles, Missouri, almost fell victim to an old scam with a new twist. The woman got a phone call last week from a man posing as her 19-year-old grandson. He claimed that he had gotten into a scuffle in Mexico and was being held in prison until he could raise enough money to get out. Now, part of the swindle is old. It's known as the grandparent scam. But these criminals used a new tool, social media, to convince the woman that the call was legitimate. Now, the woman said she was not easily fooled. At one point, she told the caller, "Hey, you don't sound like my grandson." But he gave detailed instructions about what was happening to him, that he got hit in the nose, he wasn't talking right, he was bleeding, he was going to be in jail, and that she should wire him the $13,800, which she agreed to do. Fortunately for the woman, bank officials in Mexico became suspicious, and they put a hold on the account. So her local bank was able to retrieve her money. Lucked out. Be careful of these scams. Doctors are confounded, but parents of a baby boy in India insist that the child has burst into flames for no apparent reason at least three times since birth. The baby cited in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution only by the name of Rahul was born in May, and the parents said that they first noticed flame suddenly appearing on his stomach and knees when he was just 9 days old, and since, it's happened a handful of other times. Spontaneous human combustion is rare, but it does occur. Larry Arnold, author of Ablaze. Let's check in with Larry. Larry, what an incredible case here.
Good evening, George. Your staff has tracked us down at the Crescent Hotel here in Eureka Springs, Arkansas, where we're attending the Parallel Universes Conference this weekend, put on by Keith Scales.
Well, we can find just about anybody. Anyways, have you had a chance to look into the story in India?
Yeah, surprisingly, this is not a really recent story. This was broken in by the Times of India back on August 10, but for reasons we don't fully appreciate or understand, the North American media has just picked up on this in the last 2 days. But you synopsized it quite accurately. Rahul was born in May of this year. He's now about 3 months old, and in the first 2 months of his life, according to his mother, Rajeshwari, he exhibited flames on his stomach and knees four times now. He is under medical care in India by the pediatrics unit at the Kirpak Medical College in Chennai. And while he's been under their observation, according to the medical people that we've been in contact with in India, he has not further manifested any of this phenomenon. So, of course, the doctors are a little skeptical, but they're giving him treatment as best they know how to do. And in the meantime, we're trying to help them understand means by which this might have happened to the child, if indeed it is true, genuine, spontaneous human combustion.
Well, Larry, let me ask you,
hoping to learn from them.
If the child is burning, like on his stomach, for even 5 seconds, I mean, would that not inflict some serious damage to the child's skin?
It likely would. It depends on the origin of the flame. And again, we have only at this point secondary information attributed to the mother that this is open flame combustion. We do not yet have from the medical authorities whether there is any kind of dermal tissue damage that would define it more as a first or second degree burn, or whether we're actually looking at open flame combustion here. again, if it's an oxidizing flame, you would expect some kind of deep charge in below the dermal layer. If this is an electrical phenomenon or maybe a biochemical phenomenon, then perhaps not necessarily so.
Okay, thank you so much, Larry. U.S. new home sales plummeting to 13.4% in July. That's the lowest level in 9 months as mortgage rates continue to rise. Let's get two perspectives. First from Mish Shedlock, who sent me the story. Mish, that was a horrible plunge.
It was, George, and I was on your show 10 days ago on August 14th, and I told you, I said, George, pay attention to this. Mortgage applications declined for the 13th time in 15 weeks. Now, if we're looking at this, and you were looking at that, and you paid attention, you wouldn't be surprised by this plunge in new home sales because of what happened with applications. But the economists were surprised. They predicted a rise. So these applications have been declining for 2.5, 3 months here, George, and everyone's surprised by this. Now, and then I also noted that the 30-year mortgage rate rose from 3.42 to 4.39. It's up more from that now. So taking those two things together, what's the surprise all about, George? And it's not what you and I want to see. And I want to make this pertinent because I'm on all the time, and I'm presenting these facts, and a lot of times they're bearish. It's not what you or I want. But we have to report on what's actually happening, not what we actually want to see, George.
You got that right, Miss. Thank you so much. Let's get another perspective, of course, from economist Catherine Austin Fitz. Not a good month, Catherine, for the housing market.
It's not a good month, George. In addition to the long-term mortgage rate causing mortgage applications to fall off and making buying a home for many people more expensive, we've had a lot of institutional investors buying up single-family homes and residential real estate. And, of course, this drives up their borrowing costs and lowers their stock prices. So we've seen the home builders and the REITs trade off about 5 to 10% as these rates have been rising, and that's sort of put a damper on them too. But I think it's still, you know, this is summer. Summer is a slow period. And so the test is going to be in the fall. And I think as the Fed tapers on quantitative easing, the big question is how much will inflation roll into the housing prices? There's some inflation embedded. The last thing, as you and I often talk about, though, the economy isn't very divided. We have areas that are very strong. And I suspect in the fall, you know, when everybody gets back from the beach, that the housing prices in those areas will continue strong, whereas the other areas will struggle because employment and incomes are struggling in those areas.
I think you're right. Catherine, thanks so much. Hey, so will Mars look as big as the moon in August this month? Some people think so, but it's only a Facebook hoax, friends. So don't worry about that. Up next, we're going to talk a little bit about exotic matter. Thomas Grinius joins us next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. Thomas Grinius back with us. His book, Raising Atlantis. Now, he's the founder and CEO of the Atlantis Interactive. Now, it happens to be an entertainment company that has created some of the web's most groundbreaking entertainment, including the very popular Atlantis Mapping Project, as well as the number one best-selling ebook, Raising Atlantis. Former journalist was with me about a year ago. He's back on Coast to Coast. Thomas, how are you?
I'm doing great, George. How are you?
Good to have you with us. Tell me a little bit about what you've been working on in a year.
What I've been working on, actually, is investigation into something called Ingress, which officially is a worldwide augmented reality mobile game from Google.
Okay.
But a lot of people think it's something more.
What more could it be?
Well, so what's interesting is at the top of the hour, you mentioned the NSA, the surveillance state, Prism,
yep,
and a number of our larger social media companies involved with it. The take on Ingress is actually a lot more frightening. It's that not that Google is spying on anybody, but that the game itself perhaps is simply crowdsourced research into something called exotic matter.
Really? All right. Tell me a little bit about the game, first of all.
Well, the game is something that you download onto your phone, and it has the latest in mobile and geolocation technology. And what it allows you to do is it's a scanner. Literally, it opens portals everywhere you go. So certain landmarks or sculptures on face value. We look at them. We don't know a lot about them, but when you aim your scanner, it actually reads some of the energy around there. It's actually on the leading edge of science in terms of scanning this exotic matter.
Now, this game, when it was created, do you think the developers just thought, hey, let's make a nice little video game here?
Well, within the rumor mill of all of these Ingress agents around the world and people who follow this very, very closely, the conspiracy theory is that the Niantic facility, which existed in outside of Bern, Switzerland, there was an incident there last November. And the conspiracy theory is that the scanner itself fell into public hands in a Snowden-like leak, and that Google made the best of a bad situation and just said that it's a game so that everyone can now use the technology to locate this exotic matter and help the world's leading organizations map out exotic matter and the influence behind it on our world.
Now tell us about exotic matter. Exactly what is that?
That's a good question. First thing else, what is exotic matter?
That's right.
Something you can't see, but it is a reality in terms of principles in physics. And scientists simply sum it up as ordered data. So it's something we can't see, but it tends to surround some of the world's oldest monuments, capital cities, architectures that were built where they were because the builders were drawn to those specific locations. And in those locations around there, are these exotic matter clusters, ordered data, which by itself raises a lot of questions. How did it get ordered?
How did it get ordered, of course?
Well, again, there the physicists who kind of think beyond the curve that we do have come up with the term shaper, that shapers on some other side of some trans-dimensional portal have been sending these signals. They make no claims as to whether it's intelligent, whether it's divine, benign. They make no moral judgments on it, only that clearly the data is ordered. It has come from somewhere else. It is influencing us and probably has for millennia, and that we really better get to know what this is all about.
Well, tell me a little bit more about these shapers. Exactly who or what are they?
Again, no one knows.
Well, I mean, what do you think they are?
You know, it really depends on whether you want to look at intelligent design and something spiritual, you want to look at something alien, you want to look at something we don't have a clue about. Again, it is a construct. The name Shaper was invented by physicists to simply explain, almost like the Big Bang Theory, the reality that there is ordered data.
This game... it hits what demographics?
You know, it's pretty shocking. It hits so many. You would expect there would be the Wonder Boys type of geeks, and certainly there are across the world. I mean, there are players who are creating fields of these portals, whether it's in Berlin and Singapore and Scotland and South America. I mean, it is everywhere. A lot of women, though, as well, which is interesting. It seems that a lot of the IT people, whether it's at an Amazon, a Microsoft, some of our larger corporations, are fascinated by this. So there are a lot of professionals who are playing this, as well as university students around the world. A lot of women, like I said, who really like the puzzle aspects of figuring out what this is. And then there are the hacker types who really like what they call hacking portals, which is when they find a portal, they do like to hack it and try to obtain the XM matter in it. Essentially, there are maps that are broadcast every week on something called Ingress Reports on YouTube that Google puts out that literally chart the ebb and flow of green and blue, the resistance and enlightened factions, across the planet. It's really mind-boggling.
How many people are doing this?
Well, you know, on Google Play, this game is still only in private beta. And it's invite only. And so publicly on Google Play, it says there are 500,000 active players. If you talk to others, there are other numbers thrown about. I can't comment on that because I don't know. I have to go with what is publicly on Google Play.
So 500,000, is that high or low in the video business?
Well, in terms of active players, I think it's pretty intense, and I have to imagine, again, this is private beta, so I'm kind of curious to see.
It'll be three times that.
I can't speculate, but the intensity, again, of the play, and as more people become aware of exotic matter and the fact that these scanners can be used on your phones, I think it's going to be really enlightening.
Okay, Thomas, so someone's playing the game. What's happening? Explain.
Well, what's happening is that they download the game and they hear this mysterious computer HAL-like voice from a female named Ada.
Well, that's coming out of the app?
That's coming out of the app. It says, welcome, you know, to Ingress.
Welcome to Ingress. Something like that.
It's a little creepy, but you suddenly see these gizmos going around and you suddenly see a Google Earth-like image where it shoots right down to where you are on planet Earth, and then you suddenly see a field across a map of where you are of XM clusters, and you suddenly see the world.
XM being exotic matter.
Exotic matter. You see the world in a different way. The motto of the game is very much like your show, which is the world is not what it seems.
True. Okay, so you're playing this game, you're doing your thing. What happens to these people?
Well, in the game, people achieve different levels. The thing that I've been interested in as a writer, as a novelist, is what these players, these agents, are saying about the play. And they are writing this up, posting things on Google Plus and elsewhere about how they themselves are personally affected by playing the game, that they are experiencing exotic matter, that is enhancing their abilities at work, as a parent, as everything else. And those people tend to be, they identify themselves as enlightened. They like the idea that there is XM out there and that we need to know more about this.
Now, is something paranormal happening to them, or is it all science? What is it?
It's the kind of science that is so cutting edge that it appears to be paranormal, but they explain it in scientific terms. Now, the fact that we don't know enough about XM has given rise to people who call themselves resistance, who are like, you know what, we really don't know what the effects of exotic matter are, so until we do, let's not go around opening portals and try to expose ourselves to this matter.
Now, when you talk about portals, to me, a portal is some kind of an opening someplace on this planet that connects you to someplace in this universe. Is that your same definition?
Well, I followed that. We've talked about anomalies before, specifically the one in Antarctica that inspired Raising Atlantis, and that was before the National Science Foundation actually admitted there was something down there near Lake Vostok, and we've certainly seen on your show how that's played out in recent years.
Right.
Amazing stuff. So I kind of thought of anomalies as sort of these metaphysical disturbances, so to speak. And then in my novels, because I have a Vatican linguist and an astroarchaeologist, I began to look at what are called alignments, which are where these bizarre things happening, there seems to be an alignment between terrestrial landmarks and celestial stars. And I began to research, and my books go into it, about why certain megalithic architectures, the pyramids, the U.S. Capitol, were built where they were. What Ingress did, and the whole idea of exotic matter, it added a different dimension to what I have been writing about in my books. It basically said, sure, there might be some what blatantly scientific issues or issues with magnetic polarity happening here. And sure, these cathedrals were by design built to align with certain stars. But there's something more going on. What Ingress basically says, the theory is that the people who built those cathedrals, the people who carved those faces on Easter Island, they were actually attracted to those areas and were shaped by that exotic matter, by those shapers. and that what they left behind is, in fact, proof of them being shaped.
Let's talk a little bit more about this. I want to get into, of course, those developers of this game, if they knew what they were doing, and how a game can affect you this way. Plus, we'll take calls. If you're into games, check in with us next. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. Thomas Grenier with us, and we're talking about his work here. These portholes that you've been talking about, how many are there?
That's a really good question. Hundreds, thousands, millions.
Jeez.
They seem to be wherever people point their scanners. They're being documented every day by ingress agents. That's part of what these scanners do. That's what Google's plan was in basically putting the power of this technology into a downloadable app that anybody can use on their phone. And the augmented reality games see that augmented reality simply by pointing their phone at something.
I don't understand this, though, Thomas. How does a game create these?
Well, they're already there. What the scanner does is show what you can't see with the naked eye. It shows on your screen.
All right, but where do you go?
You could go anywhere. You could go outside your house and there might be something. Other people may have identified something. It could be a sculpture garden at a university. It could be your local town square. People are finding exotic matter in these portals almost anywhere. In Berlin, just last month, I think that they put together 800 portals in a single weekend.
And what are they going to do with them?
Well, a lot of times what they do is they try to obtain the exotic matter, so to speak, or create fields, and they experience something from that. They move up in levels in the game and then theoretically experience certain enhancements in their lives.
Thomas, can anybody be hurt playing this game?
Well, that's a real good question. So far, nobody has, but there are indicators throughout history that there could be bad side effects. As a writer, I was first approached by the developers because of my work in Raising Atlantis and the whole idea of alignments. And they said, hey, there's some overlap here in this whole idea of exotic matter and what you've been writing about. Why don't you help us investigate this? So that while we field this game, you can put out a whole series of associated novels with your characters from your Raising Atlantis books and working with some of our own agents who kind of stay in the shadows and document what you experience, because writers tend to experience this sort of thing. And what this led me to find was the secret correspondence between a couple of old horror writers, Robert E. Howard and H.P. Lovecraft. And you might remember them. I think Howard created Conan and a bunch of other stories, and H.P. Lovecraft actually wrote Mountains of Madness, which itself was set in Antarctica, before I ever wrote Raising Atlantis. And I was approached by a number of people saying, hey, were you shaped? Were you inspired and didn't even know it? Maybe you've been experiencing exotic matter and you didn't know it. I looked a little deeper into this, and it turns out that those two writers had an extended correspondence, and there were suggestions that they had seen some sort of ancient language or glyphs, which we call shaper glyphs, ancient symbols that predate language and that are neurolinguistically, they affect our brains immediately upon sight and subvocalization. Well, both Howard and Lovecraft, shortly after that alleged discovery in the San Saba mine in West Texas, each independently descended into madness and suicide. I was interested in this, and sure enough, this summer at Cross Plains, Texas, every summer they celebrate Robert E. Howard Days. Well, this summer, something unusual happened. A gigantic glyph appeared overnight in the backyard behind the Robert E. Howard Museum. You can actually see this glyph. It's a weird alien-looking symbol on Google Earth. You can just go to Google Earth or even Google Maps, and you just type in Robert E. Howard Days and Cross Plains, and boom, you'll see the museum, and you just zoom in, and right there, only visible from the sky, you can see this glyph. which allegedly helped influence them in a bad way, and others, according to the enlightened players, influence in a good way. I'm investigating all that.
Let's go to some of the calls. Some people may be playing this game. John in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. Hey, John, go ahead.
Hey, how are you?
Good, John. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Sure. Yeah, I just wanted to call about Ingress. I've actually been playing the game since probably mid-February. I am level 8 on the resistance team.
All right.
I'm waiting currently for the the game to up the levels, which, are, from what I understand, is possible they're going to go up to a level 16, double them. I actually play every day along with my wife. I get out of work, and there's nothing to do usually at 11 o'clock at night. So we'll ride around town and find these portals that the gentleman was talking about. But one thing that's kind of cool about it, you actually can submit your own portals, whether it be some sort of artwork that's in the area, some sort of building that may have some kind of historical significance to it. Similar things to that. So actually, it's a lot of fun to play.
Tell me about these portals, John, that you may have discovered. What are they?
Well, portals that I have discovered myself have actually, over the course of 3 months, I have submitted, it's around 130 portals throughout my area. And what it is, you could take any kind of unique architecture is what Niantic Labs and Google are looking for. So where I live in Wilkes-Barre, we have two universities, Wilkes University and King's College. So what I'll do is I'll go down some of the streets and I'll find some of the buildings, whatever the name may be, like Catlin Hall, give a little bit of history about the building, take a picture of it, submit it to Niantic, and wait for approval. And then that then becomes a portal.
Huh. Do you feel that you could be under any potential harm playing this game?
No, not at all. No, it's just a lot of fun. There's roughly maybe probably 10 agents in our area. Unfortunately, I am outnumbered. I think it's 8-2. 8 on the enlightened side, and then my wife and I on resistance. Actually, there's about 4 on the resistance.
All right. Well, thanks for setting a little light on that for us, John. So, Thomas, what else can happen with this game?
Well, I think that what you're seeing right now is a great explanation. You find that a lot of Ingress agents actually end up working together. In terms of the social aspects of the game, you find that in local areas, resistance agents and enlightened agents join up and they work as teams in terms of mapping areas, portals, and then they do battle with the enlightened if the resistance or vice versa, but they're also cross-faction help in this game. I think a lot of people have a sense of discovery. They feel like they are really onto something. They're impatient, like our last caller, to achieve new levels and to find out what else is going in the game. There are always these theories that there is a third faction out there somewhere. And again, behind all of this is always the question, what are these shapers? And why is Ingress mapping all of this? It's really not to surveil all of us and to use GPS to find out where we are, because, in fact, it actually allows people to create their own flash mob, so to speak, at live events around the world and to map things on their own. I think the real underlying fear among other people is that, wow, these great big prison partners must really think there is something else out there that requires all of us to work together to find out what exotic matter really is and what its effects are, what its influence is. I know that my own experience as a journalist in Washington is very interesting how the intelligence agencies, we keep talking about the surveillance state. It goes beyond just keeping watch on us. Some of them, specifically at DARPA, and they certainly have that total information awareness program, they want to get to actually reading people's thoughts. And in some airports, you in fact have scanners. I think Logan's got one still. They kind of read your moods. They can't quite read thoughts. And so if someone's particularly aggressive, the TSA agents would know. The idea is that hopefully they can, just like tagging people in photos, be able to tag people's dominant thoughts to kind of cut off threats. And that might seem really creepy, except even beyond that, the people who are behind all that really believe that once you could actually read people's minds, you could then begin to influence them. So we're talking beyond the losing privacy of thoughts to actually being influenced. And what Ingress has brought forward to all of us is the idea that, hey, maybe that's already happened. And it's not just subliminal ads and this whole information overloaded culture that we're experiencing influences around us we may not want, but that there may be something more. And so I actually find the game pretty exciting because I think to the extent that we become aware of unseen influences, things we may not be aware of, we can actually take control of our thoughts and say, hey, is this what I think? Is this what I believe? Not just, is this what the media is telling me? This is what the culture is telling me, but other things that I'm not even aware of. And that's why conversations that take place around this game or in the associated series of novels that I'm writing with this game or on your show is so important, because we get to actually talk to each other, just like players get to talk and play with each other and do gut checks and saying, gee, the thing I'm hearing from that monolithic, you know, media matrix that beams down from, you know, just a few networks and everything else, is that real? Or is there something more? And let's check each other's notes.
Do you have to play the game to understand what's going on?
Not at all. In fact, a number of players, there are three different kinds of players. There are the hacker types who are just like our caller. They love going out, finding portals, doing a whole bunch of things. Then there are a number of players who are like the safe code crackers. And to generalize, a lot of these are women who follow the story of the game on the investigation boards at NianticProject.com, or they follow me at LannisGo.com and they get my updates, or on my Google Plus stream. And they follow the story. And there are characters either in the novellas that we've put out already and in my coming alignment series. And they really are involved with that aspect, not so much the gameplay. And then they're finally just core readers, people who just are never going to play the game. They're not super, they're just unable to keep up with all the different media and information that comes every day on this from around the world. So they're just content to read the novels. And they're like, okay, so now I get a big picture idea of what this is all about.
All right, next up, let's go to Eddie in San Francisco. Welcome to the program. Hi, Eddie.
Hi, how's it going?
I'm going well, thanks.
All right. Thomas, fascinating stuff, man. I'm blown away, seriously.
It's pretty mind-boggling, I gotta tell you. One thing I have to take pains to point out is that oftentimes,
yeah, I just wanted to ask, though, like, before you go on, have you ever been butt-fucked by a Martian?
No. Not that I know of, no.
Don't worry about that. Didn't get on, Thomas. Did not get on at all. Sometimes you get a few lunatics that pop in once in a while.
There you go.
Unbelievable. Anyways, back to this and back to the work. So if somebody wants to play this game, what do they do?
Well, they can go to NianticProject.com, which has an investigation board, and they can see all these crazy strands and request an invite. They can also go to just Ingress.com, which has some very slick videos that show the world is not what we think, and they tell you about the game and you can request an invite. They can also, if they want an invite sooner, they can look for me, circle me on Google Plus. It's Plus Thomas Grenius. And every Thursday, I speak with hundreds of Ingress agents on this hour-long thread at 7 p.m. And then they all tune to you, George. And we discuss the game, and I give out invites and passcodes that the developers give me to pass out.
Let's go to David in Jacksonville, Florida, first-time caller. Hey, Dave, welcome to the program.
Hey, Eddie, are you sure you've never been?
Well, we're under attack, folks.
Well, you know what? I'm telling you, it's because I'm a self-identified resistance member, and I think it's brought out some of the other side.
You know, Thomas, this whole concept, how did you stumble across this?
Well, I was actually doing research on my upcoming series of novels called The Alignment, just following up on the adventures of my astroarchaeologist, Conrad Yates, and beautiful Vatican linguist, Serena Sergetti. And as I began to do my research, I began to stumble across some of the investigators and developers of Ingress who were looking into exotic matter. And, you know, when you start crossing paths with people, whether it's under the U.S. Capitol or in other strange places, you begin to realize, hey, maybe we're approaching something from two different sides. So where in my fiction, which is based on some real people doing things, my approach was always, hey, this is really cool. There is allegedly this conspiracy that started in the first century in ancient Rome that today has grown into something called the Alignment. And I want to find out what's really going on with this and how these alignments and major world capitals all fit together. And then I'm running into these Ingress people saying, that's really interesting, because what you call alignments, we call these big portals. And it's not just, you know, the U.S. Capitol on Jenkins Hill that happens to be aligned with the Star Regulus. There's actually something under Capitol Hill, and it's exotic matter. And there's a reason why people, including George Washington, were attracted to this area, and the Catholic Church beforehand, because they actually owned, Daniel Carroll actually owned, or excuse me, his brother, first Archbishop of the U.S., actually owned that hill and sold it to Washington before built and moved to Georgetown. They were going to build Georgetown University on Capitol Hill. They moved it to Georgetown. Well, what was the fascination with that hill? Why did a landowner named Francis Pope, no relation to the current Pope, that was his name, Francis Pope in the 1600s, have a vision that a great empire would rise on that land, which was called Rome in that day, along the Little Tiber, which was this little river off the Potomac that to this day reaches the steps of the Capitol, but which they've covered. It's now part of a sewer system, which I go into in the Alignment Federal City. That research led me to the developers, and we decided, hey, let's team up. And let's try to explain what you discover, what we discover. We're going to do it through this game. You're going to do it through these series of novels. And we'll kind of cross-populate them in a way that's actually never been done before in the game world or in publishing. That's what made it really exciting for me, along with the fact that these novels themselves seem to be of influence and kind of open up these epiphanies to readers.
These shapers, only got about a minute here left, Thomas, but these shapers, and you don't know who they are or where they're coming from, but they obviously have a plan, don't they?
Well, that's the concern. That's why there are people who are called resistance saying, hey, no one's giving out ordered data for nothing. There must be a plan. Is it for good? Is it for evil? We don't know. That's what the investigation is all about.
What's your website, Thomas, for people who want to track this?
AtlantisGo.com.
All right. Good luck. Good luck with what you're doing. I'm not a game player, so I wouldn't really be into the portholes and know about that. But some people who are, I guess they understand exactly what is going on. Up next, we're going to talk with you about a breaking story from Mars. It may be hard for you to believe, but you get to hear it next on Coast to Coast AM.